We must just take on the much more serious issue of the safety of our paramedics. Jackie, we will get back to your call in a couple of minutes. But on the line with me is our Provincial Health MEC, Dr. Noma French Mbombo. Obviously, yesterday we were chatting about the terrible story of the young boy who died in the ambulance which had been targeted by armed robbers. And sadly, we know that that wasn't the first such incident by a long shot. Now, MEC, you a little while ago unveiled the Provincial Health Department's plans to intensify efforts to keep our emergency services workers safe. Thank you for joining us to explain what those plans are. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am. Good afternoon to the listeners. Yes, we are intensifying the plans that we originally had some interventions last year through Operation Kuseleka, where we identify red zones. Actually, the South African Police Services identify the red zones, and then they communicate with us. And now for our crew members, when they go to these red zoned areas, they could be escorted by them. But what we have seen now, the challenge we are seeing the sporadic attacks on our staff and in our vehicles outside of these red zones, which is what now warranted us to intensify our efforts. So what we have done is to work with the City of Cape Town, because already they have a safety network of the resources, where you'll have 500 metro police, they've got traffic police, neighborhood watches, trained to the auxiliary. So we've added our EMS in that space. Also, CT, they've got the gunshot spotters in some other areas, not necessarily in the red zone areas. Meaning now, when an incident happens, if there's any elements of crime happening, or there's a fight, or there's a gang fight, in any way, even if it's not a red zone, not only the city could be able to pick it up through their cameras, they've got 1,200 CCTV cameras throughout the N1, N2, and all other areas. They can pick it up, and then the EMS person who's also in that desk can be able to share the information immediately with the EMS, so that by the time they are being called that side, that the other one from the SAP can be able to share the information immediately, so that everything happens at the same time. In addition to that, we do have the panic buttons that are within the ambulance, but currently we'll find that those panic buttons, they go via the call center. Mm. The call center that has to call the law enforcement official. Now, we want also to intensify the system, because it means the information system and technology, so that we could be able for them that the panic button goes directly to the person who could be able to respond and provide the assistance. But I must also indicate that whilst we have this with the city, and then we have put more resources to this, there are other attacks that are happening outside the city. For example, the one last week or so, it happened in Stellenbosch. The others happening in the Asian Park and Worcester, other ones in Chicago and Paul. So we need also to work with the other municipality and see how we can transplant and replicate some of what we are doing now. Probably the city assisting them in terms of the technology, so that we can intensify these kind of services. And also with their neighborhood watches, there are people who are on the ground who are walking and all of those, and they are in the same WhatsApp group that is being monitored in that space, so that if anyone spots something, they immediately they can send that information, so that a law enforcement officer can be able to be there on the spot.
Okay, so tapping into communication and technology where it can help, tapping into community policing forums and neighborhood watches to collaborate with them. What about equipping the staff on board those vehicles with the skills to try and avoid these situations in the first place? Can you, for example, consider sending all of your ambulance crews on anti-hijacking driving courses?
It's already happening. It's part of the intervention. It's part of the interventions we started last year through the Operation Kuseleka. Because already, for example, the ambulances, they are installed with the anti-smash and grab. They've got a tracking system, and then they are going on anti-jacking training. It's already happening, and also the counseling when the incident happens. It's already happening, but now we have to intensify so that the responses come to all directions. Mm. And it happens immediately.
One last question before we let you go. Those red zones which were identified last year, has that list of zones been increased or expanded in the light of the recent attacks, or is it still the same designations that you put in place last year?
you will have a permanent red zone, for example, like the Browns Farm, Philippine, the Mannenberg, the Hanover Park, and all of those. You have got others that could be identified by the staff, probably 24 hours red zones, and then afterwards they are out. And then you might have ones that are not even red zones. Currently, the information from SARS, we have got about 16 of those, which is 10 seemingly are permanent. And then they've added 6 that, for example, like Kaksien-Fontein, for example, has recently been added. The J section in the Lingeletu in Khayelitsha, because previously you have Site C Khayelitsha. So that's what happens, but as I indicated, that our staff are being attacked even in the areas that are in red zones, like in the end, where the 2 days ago when the young boy was being transported ended up being delayed. It's not necessarily a red zone area, but because the city has got a camera, they've been able at least to see some parts of what is happening, which is now the footage. They have been able to give it to the police so that to increase also the issue of the conviction rate. Well, in most instances, you'll find that when they used to be attacked, the police will record it as probably stealing a cell phone. Yet it has affected a person personally. A recent case is in Khayelitsha, which it was reported in December last year. For the whole of this year, we've been going in and out in terms of the court. So recently has been convicted for 12 years because you could have one of our own to be a witness, so that to paint a picture in terms of what is the impact. So it's not only about a car hijacking or stealing a cell phone. It's more than that, because in most instances there are patients also that are sitting there at the back.
Mm. Dr. Mbombo, I'd like you to hold the line, please, because we've got another caller on the line who has a question for you. And Ian in Rondebosch, I think you are yourself a paramedic. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yes, I am. And I'm one of the provincial... I have been helping our provincial ambulance quite a lot as a volunteer. Gauteng EMS has got armoured personnel carriers. Why doesn't Western Cape EMS also have armoured personnel carriers? We've also got medical battalions sitting here in Cape Town, which... have got medically trained people who are registered with Health Practitioners Council, and they've also got armoured vehicles. Why aren't they also being brought into the red zones instead of just sending the normal ambulances in there?
Dr. Mbombo, your response to Ian, why aren't ambulances having that armed escort? Or why is it only happening in some cases, I guess we should ask?
Already, the Premier has already written to the Provincial Minister of the Police and is waiting for the response, where she has prioritised the escort of the ambulances by the SANDF or to be placed in some of those areas. Currently, as I indicated earlier, that the South African police, they are helping us in terms of escorting the ambulances to those areas in the red zone areas. No one is allowed to go and pick up a patient without being escorted. Of course, the crime happening in the Western Cape is up to the level where probably that police, when they go via the police station, has to be busy probably responding to another robber and all of those. But in terms of the being accompanied by the private, you find that firstly, it's not an ideal situation to militarize health services. So you cannot have also the issue of the confidentiality. You cannot have someone inside who is not necessarily a health official inside the ambulance. There's the issue of the privacy and confidentiality. So already with the staff, they're helping us with that. And also when it comes to the issues of the private, the city research that they've conducted, that's why we find that now they put some of these safety issues within their ambit, because with what they've experienced with the private, you'll find that they are not necessarily trained in regard to, especially with the issues rated at the community level. Hence, you find that they've intensified having more of a neighborhood watches, because you find that these are the local people who identify, who know what is happening, compared with a private person who might have a gun, which is most of them, they don't even have the gun, who might have a gun. So it's about the first thing that they've been, what I heard, that they have been trained around. It's about for them to, in terms of the defense related to them, not necessarily for someone where the ambulance, like in the case of what is happening 2 days ago, someone, then they put these barriers so that the tires could be affected for all the cars. So it was not necessarily the attack on the ambulance itself, but it was about any form of the crime where they wanted to hijack and demand what and rob anybody. So it was not necessarily within the ambulance. And with the 2 days incidents that happened, the police did come, and then they assess and find that, and they ask whether they are fine, because at the time there was a tire burst and all of those. Mm-hmm. So while they were waiting for another ambulance to in terms to replace it. But immediately when the police left, the people came. That's when now they robbed them of their cell phones and all of these. So it goes beyond. And also, as indicated, that if, for example, in the previous one incident in Khayelitsha, you'll find that it's young people, some of them, when they assessed them, that they were actually under the influence of a substance abuse. So it's not only the people where it's a syndicate or it's a something that is organized, not necessarily organized crime. It's the people who use this opportunity for the people who are helpless, and then for them they want just a quick fix in terms of whether they have to get the medication that is there, whatever reason, or probably for the cell phones.